It's the unspoken assumption. It's not always unspoken. The religions of your culture aren't reticent about it. Man is the end product of creation. Man is the creature for whom all the rest was made. This world, this solar system, this galaxy, the universe itself. True. But did the entire cosmic process of creation, in fact, come to an end 3 million years ago, right here on this little planet, with the appearance of man? No, of course not. Then why did you tell it that way? I guess because that's the way it's told. That's the way it's told among the takers. It's certainly not the only way it can be told. Yes, I can see that now. So what are we to make of this story? I bared my teeth in a rueful grin. It's a myth. Incredibly enough, it's a myth. Ishmael gazed at me. I said yesterday that your story is about the meaning of the world, divine intentions in the world, and human destiny. According to this first part, what's the meaning of the world? According to this story, the meaning of the world is that it's the birthplace of man. Of course, the takers regard the world as a sort of human life support system, as a machine designed to produce and sustain human life. Yes, that's so. Supposing there is a divine agency behind creation, what does this story reveal about the gods' intentions? Well, basically, the whole thing was for man. The gods created the universe so they could create us. If they hadn't wanted us, they wouldn't have bothered. Clearly, Ishmael said, man must be a creature of enormous importance to the gods, but this part of the story doesn't reveal their intentions toward him. They must have some special destiny in mind for him, but it isn't revealed here. True. Every story is based on a premise, is the working out of a premise. The story of the takers is the working out of this premise, the world was made for man. I blinked over that for a moment and said, I can't quite see why it's a premise. The people of your culture made it a premise, took it as a premise. They said, what if the world was made for us? Keep going. Think of the consequences of taking that as your premise. If the world was made for you, then what? Well, I see what you mean. If it was made for us, then it belongs to us, and we can do what we damn well please with it. Exactly. Every morning, the people of your culture wake up and say to themselves, well, the world was made for us, so what shall we do with it today? That's what's been happening here for the past 10,000 years. You've been doing what you damn well please with the world. Yes, I said, and thought for a second. Actually, that's pretty amazing. I mean, you hear this 50 times a day. People talk about our environment, our seas, our solar system. I've even heard people talk about our wildlife. And just yesterday you assured me that there is nothing in your culture remotely resembling mythology. True, I did. Yesterday I said your story provides you with an explanation of how things came to be this way. What contribution does this first part of the story make to that explanation? Well, I guess it contributes this. Things came to be this way because the world was made for man. If it had been made for jellyfish, things would be different. So it's not our fault if the world is messed up. It's the gods' fault. Ishmael smiled. You're beginning to get the idea. Okay, I said when I arrived the next day, I think I have the middle and the end of the story down pat. Ishmael nodded, and I started the tape recorder. The world was made for man, I began, but it took him a long, long time to figure that out. For nearly 3 million years, he lived as though it had been made for jellyfish. He lived like a lion or a wombat. What does that mean, to live like a lion or a wombat? It means to live at the mercy of the world. It means to live without having any control over your environment. I see. Go on. Okay, in this condition, man could not be truly man. He couldn't develop a truly human way of life. So during the early part of his life, actually the greater part of his life, he just foozled along, getting nowhere and doing nothing. There was a key problem to be solved. Man couldn't get beyond a certain point, living out in the open as a hunter-gatherer, always moving from place to place in search of food. He had to settle down, had to have a permanent base from which to build. Well, what stopped him from doing that? What stopped him was the fact that if he settled down in one place, he'd starve. As a hunter-gatherer, he'd simply clean the place out. There'd be nothing left to hunt and gather. To achieve settlement, man had to learn one fundamental manipulation. He had to manipulate his environment so that this food exhaustion didn't occur. He had to manipulate it so that it produced more human food. In other words, he had to become an agriculturalist. This was the turning point. The world had been made for man, but he couldn't take possession of it until this problem was solved. And he finally solved it 10,000 years ago, back there in the Fertile Crescent. This was a very big moment, the biggest in human history to this point. The limitations of the hunting-gathering life had kept man in check for 3 million years. But with agriculture, those limitations vanished, and his rise was meteoric. Settlement gave rise to division of labor. Division of labor gave rise to technology. With technology came trade and commerce. With trade and commerce came mathematics, literacy, science, and all the rest. The whole thing was underway at last, and the rest, as they say, is history. And that's the middle of the story.
Very impressive, Ishmael said. You realize that the big moment you've just described